Okay, so it's our half moon lunar observance night tonight, and it's just been a few days since we had Ajahn Jayasaro here visiting with us, and of course it was very wonderful having him here, and although he was only here for a few days, he gave a tremendous amount of time to our community, teaching, answering questions, and just giving encouragement in various different ways. Yes, you think back, he was only here like 4 days, so, but it was a full 4 days. I hope he recovered. See, because it just got off the plane and came up here. So it was very special. And it's also, it's been a while since we've had any visiting elders. So it's always good to have experienced teachers come and spend time with us. Because there's always different perspectives. And sometimes hearing a different perspective is, you get a different angle and get a fresh look at something, which is, the Dhamma doesn't really change, but, how you look at it is what changes. And one of the phrases that he used in Dhamma talk and in question and answers is emphasizing how in Buddhism, one of the things that we're doing is learning how to learn, and that's that is a perspective that's really important to take on and reflect deeply, because so often, even when we learn something, it's either learning information or learning details of knowledge or something, but the having to understand the process of learning is really kind of the essence of why what's the difference that in terms of the Buddha's teaching, because the Buddha, of course there are many aspects of knowledge, but it's also how do we apply it? So I'm thinking in terms of the difference between an ordinary run of the mill person and a stream enter, a sotapanna. I mean, one of those distinguishing features is having relinquished and gone beyond what's called sila patta paramasa, the kind of attachment to precept and practice, and it's oftentimes explained that the understanding of a stream enterer is one that recognizes isn't trying to gain purification just by doing a particular practice or holding the precepts, and because we do things in a mechanical and rote way, and think if we just do something in a particular way or think in a particular way or have a particular view, then somehow there's going to be a purification. But we have to internalize it, so that learning how to learn, internalizing the process of what's the purpose of the precepts, what's the purpose of the meditation practices, what's the purpose of the wisdom teachings, what's its functions, what's its essence. How does it transform us? So we have to penetrate that and be able to go beyond just this. Well, I've got this formula, I'll keep the five precepts, I'll watch my breath for a while, and then I'll reflect on anicca, dukkha, anatta, and then I'll be free of dukkha. Well, it's not how it works. It is how it works, but you have to learn how to use it, how to approach it, how to make it come alive. So yeah, learning how to learn and being interested in that process of learning. And of course, that's why one of the qualities that the Buddha gives as an aspect of awakening, or the qualities that lead to spiritual understanding, is chanda, in the sense of, usually it's translated as desire, but it's kind of it's a wholesome desire, it's a positive desire, so maybe motivation is a good word, and learning how to harness desire, because it's also, the Buddha says, desire is the cause of suffering, but that's tanha. And tanha is desire that always has clinging attachment, is associated with greed, hatred, and delusion. So that knowing how to motivate ourselves, knowing how to stir up a wholesome desire, knowing how to put forth effort. Because these things are kind of double-edged swords, in the sense of, you know, when we grasp and cling and with unskillful desire, then we suffer. But without any desire whatsoever, just sort of turning into a kind of like a, you know, ourselves into having the sharpness and acuity of a melted marshmallow is not going to cut it. There needs to be effort there. There needs to be investigation. There needs to be reflection. And so that learning how to learn is really important. So it's the learning how to use the kind of the tools that the Buddha gave us, and of course there's many of the teachings that the Buddha gave are all tools, and learning how to apply them, and it's just that, you know, keeping precepts, doing the meditation. But you know, underlying all of it, of course, the last Dhamma talk I gave was on the foundations of mindfulness, and this one will be as well. because the Buddha really did place a tremendous amount of emphasis on these four foundations of mindfulness: body, feeling, mind, and the objects of mind, or dhammas. But also knowing how to hold that, knowing how to use it skillfully, knowing how to approach that development of mindfulness, so that there is a understanding of how the mind clings, and how the mind, or the heart, lets go. And of course, the mindfulness is, say, the four foundations of mindfulness are they have objects, because that's the nature of the mind, is to go out to an object. But also part of that learning how to learn is understanding the nature of the mind, so that we use that object, But then knowing how to draw the attention back in so that we understand the fundamental quality of, you know, what is mindfulness based on? And of course it's based on this, the nature of mind that has this ability or quality of knowing, or sort of like a selfless knowing awareness that is in clear and unshaken, and is able to relinquish and let go of its propensity to cling or to grasp or to get entangled in the world of objects. So that paying attention to using these four foundations of mindfulness, because the Buddha is, can't get much clearer. There is this direct path. And four foundations of mindfulness are a direct path to knowledge and the ending of dukkha. So that, but it's also, we have to learn how to apply it, learn how to use it, learning how to learn. And this, but the, as we direct that or establish our hearts in this, this selfless knowing awareness, in order to sustain it or to give it some, so it has some shape or form, then we have to pay attention to the foundations of mindfulness, paying attention to the body. Paying attention to the body in its, not just in the, in its all its different manifestations of how we perceive it or experience it. And that's, and maybe that's also in terms of learning how to learn. How do we learn in a way that we can be grounded in the experiential rather than just the conceptual? Because that's so often what our, where our learning goes to is into conceiving, into the ideas, or even the idea of mindfulness, the idea of truth. That creates more views and opinions and distances ourselves. So being able to return to awareness, mindfulness, so that we are well grounded in experience. Experience or the experiential, but certainly then the importance of these four foundations of mindfulness can't be emphasized too much. There's a very beautiful sutta when it begins. The scene is set with Sariputta being ill and passing away from that illness, and his attendant at that time was his younger brother Chunda, and after Sariputta passed away, then Chunda brought Sariputta's robes and his bowl back to, because he passed away in Nalanda, and which was his home village, hometown, and which is in Magadha, and he went all the way back to Savatthi, which is in the coastland country. Can't remember how far apart they are, but brought them back, and then immediately went to see Ananda. And said, Sariputta has passed away. I've got his robe and bowl, robes and bowl here. And Ananda is immediately sort of said, "Well, this is beyond my pay grade. We should be going to see the Buddha." And then they both go to pay respects to the Buddha and inform, and Ananda informs the Buddha of what the news from that Chunda has brought, and then he says to the Buddha just how, you know, he felt his faculties had just completely gone away. He was just really sapped with, you know, as if he's if he's about to faint because of the kind of shock and grief at hearing the news of Sariputta's passing. And then the Buddha is not quite as warm and fuzzy as Ananda, and said, "Well, what made you feel so faint and diminished? Did you know? Did was the passing of Sariputta? Did he take away the aggregate of sila with? Did he take the aggregate of sila with him, the aggregate of virtue with him? No. Oh, you diminished because he took the aggregate of concentration, meditation with him? No, the aggregate of wisdom, aggregate of freedom? No, the aggregate of knowledge and vision of freedom? No." He said, why are you feeling so diminished? He said, everything's here as before. And Ananda, I mean, very beautifully says, no, those things are still there. But he was always kind of tireless and skilled in being a teacher, a mentor, a leader, and always so supportive of, you know, training everyone in the Dhamma, and particular Ananda speaking for himself. And it was important for himself. He got support and encouragement from Sariputta's teachings. And then the Buddha says that it's true, but it's still whatever he taught, whatever any of us teach, it still has to be grounded in the reality that there is nothing that is formed or fabricated or created that is permanent. And whatever is, basically whatever is of the nature to arise has to cease. And there's no getting around that. But he said it's also like a branch of a large and healthy tree has fallen, but the tree is still healthy, so that Sariputta has passed away, but the Sangha is still strong and accomplished. Dhamma is still true and available. And then this is one of the teachings, where the Buddha says, to take yourself as your refuge, take yourself as an island, not taking anything else, as a refuge. And say, how does one take oneself as a refuge? It's by taking the Dhamma as a refuge, relying on the Dhamma, taking no other refuge other than the Dhamma. And in a sense, these foundations of the teachings and the path are in these fundamental truth that the Buddha pointed, and how does one take the Dhamma as a refuge, take yourself as a refuge? It's by adhering to these four foundations of mindfulness, and one taking the body, feeling, mind objects, there where one is relying on the qualities of, say, ardency, that being ardent, alert, mindful, that sense of atapi sampajano satima, and then the turning away from the greed and distress toward the world, the liking and disliking toward the world, and the world just being that which is that one externalizes, which is everything outside, but also everything inside. That is the world. That's like the Buddha is asked, you know, the world, what is the world? And so that whereby one perceives the world is a perceiver of the world and is a conceiver of the world. That is the world. So that what one, everything external that one perceives and conceives, and the whole process of perceiving and conceiving, that is the world. And the entanglement that we have with, through desire and aversion, through liking and disliking, through the greed and distress that we have. And then being able to approach that with that sense of ardency, of alertness, clear comprehension, being mindful, well established in mindfulness. So that's is a learning how to learn. That learning how to direct attention so that we can rely on the world in the sense of body, mind, and the objects of all of our senses, the subjects of our senses, and be well established in a kind of a selfless knowing awareness, mindfulness. This is, this is having a refuge, and being able to use the teachings of the Buddha to enter in and abide in the freedom from suffering. I mean, that's the Buddha says over and over and over again. You know, I teach only two things: dukkha and the ending of dukkha. That sense of suffering, dissatisfaction, discontent, dis-ease, and it's the liberation from that. And so that, again, coming back to the experiential rather than just the idea of suffering, the idea of me, because that's just an idea. I mean, it's what one conceives of or thinks of as who I am, it's a moving target. And just the knowing the experience in the present moment, knowing that this is impermanent, this is changing, this is insubstantial, this is impossible to draw out something that we say, this is a permanent self, this is a permanent identity. And it doesn't mean that there's nothing. That's the beauty of the Buddha's teaching. It is this is a middle way of practice. It's a middle way of teaching. There's the Buddha's weaving his way through the natural extremes that the mind tends to go to, because we tend to go to the extremes. Well, if it's not, It's got to be either black or white. It's got to be this or that. It's got to be that which I like or which I dislike. It's which I approve of or what I disapprove of. But the Buddha is saying that is there is a way through that. And mindfulness is the key, the cultivation of a selfless knowing awareness. or not so much even the cultivation of selfless knowing awareness, but being able to, because it's there. We have to recognize it. We have to learn how to, you know, to take it as a refuge. Learn how to not miss the opportunity to have that refuge. And so that where we have a foundation, as the Buddha said, having the Dhamma as a refuge, not taking any other refuge. And the Buddha uses, take yourself as a refuge. We've got to do it ourselves. But it's just relying on Dhamma, relying on truth, relying on that which is of kind of ultimate reality of things, and part of that reality is there is a whatever arises ceases, whatever has come to be will have to pass away, and that includes ourselves. It includes all that we cherish, and it's not looking at it in a way that is, woe is me, everything's impermanent. It's more like, this is the truth. This is the reality, and I can live with qualities of heart that are based in generosity and kindness. It's like what the Buddha called the khanda of virtue, the aggregate of virtue. We can be established in the aggregate of virtue. We can be established in that isn't diminished. That is actually the more we're able to relinquish a sense of attachment or expectation or not seeing clearly, we can really dwell in the aggregate of concentration. The mind can become truly peaceful and clear. And so wisdom and discernment can really properly function. And the more we're able to get out of the way and see according to just this knowledge and vision of the way things truly are, the more peaceful and bright the heart becomes. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.